Welcome to Serenity, a service for your well-being. I'm Peggy Nichols, and along with my spirit guide, Anthony, we're going to be your host for the next 55 minutes. Each week, I have the pleasure of bringing in various guests, and tonight I'm extremely excited of having this gentleman come on. He's written a wonderful book through Two Moon Press called The Burning Spirit. This gentleman is a wonderful book which describes his adventure of being a Hollywood stuntman. Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Reverend Banzai Vattel. And how are you this evening, Banzai?
I'm doing well, Peggy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the program tonight. And I know you have another interview just shortly after this one.
Yes, ma'am. Busy night.
Well, wonderful. Well, you know, reading your book, I am just so intrigued. And what a journey you've had.
yeah, I know, huh?
Oh, well, being very much a spiritualist myself, and my journey, the turns and bumps in the road, and you know, but we get to our destination, and your book is so really interesting because not only being a stuntman, but you've had some major bumps in the road along the way here, sir.
I think we all have. I think I've just been able to let mine go out there a little bit.
Well, I have to say, I'm looking forward when you're back in Michigan so I can have you sign and autograph this book I have of yours. And
I would be honored.
Thank you. Well, Banzai, I'd love for our listeners to have some background about you. I mean, Okay. Can we just kind of step back? Because you are going through a transition from like childhood, adulthood, but into your journey of the spiritual path. But let's get some more background for the listeners. You were raised, I believe, what, Jewish?
I was raised Jewish, yes. I was bar mitzvahed at 13. And
Well, yes. can you give us I'm going to let you run with that. Just kind of give us some history, okay?
Well, great. Well, I was raised Jewish, so you know that's right up there with about as strict as being raised Catholic, I think. So
yes.
You know that sort of becomes the basis of my rebellion in my later years, I think. But basically, since 1985, I've been a stuntman for film and television. I've worked on shows like, you know, probably some that you've seen: Ghost Whisperer, CSI Miami, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel. And most recently, some films would be Transformers, Dark Side of the Moon, Scream 4, and I think 30 Minutes or Less is out there right now, too. And then this Christmas, I actually have a stunt acting role in the very Harold and Kumar Christmas 3D, which comes out in December. But my book basically chronicles my life and spiritual journey and kind of shows how spiritual principles played a part in my life before I was aware of them, and how they affect me now that I'm a little more conscious of them, you know? So I received my doctorate degree in philosophy and metaphysical sciences from the University of Metaphysical Sciences back in 2009. And then after I actually had earned my master's, I became ordained as a reverend by the Wisdom of the Heart Church. So that's a basic background on me.
Fabulous. Oh, well, you know, we are born, I think, with such a wonderful gift, and our intuitiveness is there, but I think our circumstances, our life, and religion all kind of plays a role of us somewhat not being open all the time, or we start closing down, and our parents taking us by the hand to a particular church, and we're sitting there going, I don't feel like I fit in here. This doesn't resonate. Now, is that something that happened with you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, obviously, like I said, being raised Jewish, you know, it was a really strict kind of upbringing, and the social order and the way you believe and the fear you have in God, And that was really what my problem was. I had two problems with basically my religion. I was sort of forced into by birth. And that is, and there are some really beautiful things in Judaism and in Catholicism. But for me, the two problems that I had was, one, I know that I loved God. Yet, you know, through all this teaching, it kept telling me I needed to fear him, you know, and like, you know, if you did this and this, then, you know, he'd bring this wrath down upon you. And something never really resonated with me with that. I was like, well, how am I supposed to love somebody or have somebody love me unconditionally if there's actually conditions on it? So, you know, that was a big problem. And then I started realizing, you know, that in Judaism, you know, you can only marry another Jew. You can't, you know what I mean? It was very much about keeping Jews with Jews and not intermixing. And I just felt like, you know what, we're kind of one people, one planet. I never really looked at all of us as separate beings. We're all human beings, you know? So those two things really, they kind of resonated with me all through my Jewish career, I guess you could say, until, you know, I got out of school and got into the stunt world, and I basically just kind of, like most people do, I think, just put off religion and kind of did my own thing until I came to terms with what was really true for me.
Wonderful. I know when my mother would take me to church when I was younger, and I would just sit there and I would feel very lost and empty. And of course, you could see the mouthing of the minister or preacher up there, and it's like the words wouldn't penetrate. And I always felt so uncomfortable. And too, at an early age, I left going to churches, and I found myself more connected by being outdoors, leaning against an oak tree, and having my one-on-one conversation to God, or who I felt was God. And that felt more at peace for me.
Without a doubt. I think everybody has experienced it. Everybody has gone out in nature and sat, you know, near a waterfall or sat alone under a big tree or sat at the beach on the ocean by themselves and just feel something, an energy that, you know, it's just sort of unexplainable, just to show that there really is some really powerful stuff going on in there. And sometimes I think, you know, organized religion can kind of keep you from that. I don't want to sound like I'm knocking organized religion, because I know some people that it works very, very well for, you know, they're happy with it. You know, they're really good people because of it, and they enjoy their lives because of it. So, you know, I don't want to really come across like I'm bashing organization, but for me personally, in my own experience, it just really, kind of doesn't work for me.
Well, and I know the families definitely can raise an eyebrow when stepping away from what has been the culture and a way of life. And I'm sure, did your mother and father raise a few eyebrows when you decided to do walk a different path?
No, you know what? It's really surprising. And probably what has helped me make the transition easier is my parents were always really supportive. My father, my mother was Jewish. My father was actually Catholic. And then, you know, because of the way the religions work, we were supposed to be raised Jewish, but basically what our parents did, they let us go to church and synagogue, and we basically got to choose. And then when we were young, we each chose Judaism as opposed to Catholicism. So although my dad was never really a practicing Catholic, you know, he was Catholic and, you know, and believed sort of the Catholic ways, but he was always tolerant enough and really spiritually advanced for a Catholic, you know, to be able to be accepting and go, okay, you know, you can believe what you want to believe, I'll believe what I want to believe, and it'll totally work out fine. So I think luckily, mostly because of my father, you know, I have been able to, I've been able to use that for my transition, you know, to be more open to these types of things.
Wonderful. And as I really want people to go and read your book, it's amazing. But, well, walking through your life here and, you know, looking at your introductions, and I love that you start with, you are what you believe you are. Oh my God, that's very profound. And When did you find your discovery? When did you, you know, I think when we walk through our life, it's so nice that we learn what we want, but also that learning and discovering what we don't want in life. And here you start your book out, and I love it again. You are what you believe you are. How did that come to you? How did you almost feel like you were on your path, and this is what I want?
Okay. Well, that actual principle of sort of I coined it, if I could put like my mantra that I live by is what you believe you will create in reality. It's what you believe you are. And that really came about. It didn't really come about for me till after I kind of started on my spiritual path. And I kind of come to that conclusion, you know, through my experiences. A lot of help with that was with, my father introduced me to a book. It was a trilogy of books by Neil Donald Walsh. It was called Conversations with God. Are you familiar with that book?
Yes, it's amazing.
A wonderful book. And, you know, and it was one of those things where, and I hope people do this with my book, is when you're reading it, it resonates with you. You're like, oh, my gosh. Okay, so that principle is kind of an offshoot of, you know, of kind of his sort of spiritual teachings. And how it could relate to me and why I know it works is I've been able to use examples of it. For instance, you know, there's examples like I was a pole vaulter in high school, you know, so and back in the mid 80s, it was thought that no one could ever break the 20-foot barrier in pole vaulting, you know, to be able to pole vault 20 feet high. Olympic vaulters, they were hovering around like 19 foot 11 for a couple of years, you know, then all of a sudden, like one Russian guy, his name was Butka, and he broke 20 feet. After that, within 2 or 3 weeks, like 7 or 8 other vaulters broke 20 feet. And so my question was, well, why? What, in that 3-week span, was there like this monumental explosion of physical prowess or, you know? But no,
yes.
I think what happened is once Butka broke that, other vaulters saw that it could be done. And they also saw that, wait a minute, this guy that broke it, I've beaten him in competitions. I'm just as good as he is. You know, so they believed they could do it. And all of a sudden, everybody's, you know, doing 20 feet. I think there's examples over and over of this to sort of cement that idea that what you believe, you know, you will create in your reality.
Oh, definitely. And that's it. When, if you follow the format that everybody else puts out there, they call like being led as a sheep. It's when you decide, no, I can do this. You know, I can make this happen. I can manifest what I truly want and desire. I think, again, that strength, that power in believing, nothing truly is impossible. And I think it's scary for a lot of people to do that, though.
It is, because you know why? I believe that in doing that, you're empowering yourself. And I believe it's really a lot easier to rely on other people, society's teaching, religions, to kind of sort of take the blame for stuff. If it didn't work out, well, you know, God doesn't want this to happen for me. You know, it's really easy to sort of, but when you're empowering yourself and it's just, you know, you're creating it and it doesn't happen the way you are wanting it to, then it's your fault. It's your responsibility. And that's hard for people to, it's hard for people to accept that, I think, you know, I mean.
it is. And I think as you've been on your journey, you know, we're always tested too, Banzai. And it's sometimes those simple things in life that we're going to say, okay, let's see how true they really are. You know, spirit, you know, does have a playful imagination in mind, but we are also tested. And I truly believe, you know, we are never, rewarded for bad behavior. So I think those little tests, are we tempted to stray outside like the marriage or, geez, I just saw that person drop a $5 bill. Ooh, do I want to go and give it to him or should I just quietly pick it up and put it in my own pocket? We have to live and be examples each and every day. And this one compliment I heard about you actually from the gentleman who published your book, Two Moon Press, that he says you're going to love talking with Banzai. You know, he's very spiritual, but he doesn't just talk it. He lives it every day. And, you know, and I admire that, Banzai, because so many people, they talk or there's that excitement. They want to be accepted in this new category, but then the novelty wears off, or when they don't, well, in my case, people go, well, I don't hear my spirit guide's name, or I don't see them. And they just kind of give up. And it's like, well, this is boring. You know, they just don't realize that discipline goes along with this. And I'm sure in your case, you know, being in Hollywood, oh, I mean, there's very, you know, beautiful men and women out there. And unfortunately, the drugs and so, you know, there's so much that is at your disposal. It has to be challenging at times.
It is challenging. But, you know, being on this path and just being really, really comfortable now with who I am and my relationship with God and the universe and, you know, and everything around me has really helped me. And the reason I notice it is I don't preach, you know, I don't try to make people believe, you know, what I believe, you know, but what happens is people see me living a certain way and they're sort of intrigued by it. And then they'll ask me, hey, well, you know, dang, Banzai, you just had this major thing happen and it doesn't seem to bother you too much. You know, what's that all about? You know, then I'll tell them, you know, what my perception is of it, you know, and it kind of holds interest. So I believe that, you know, people will learn what they're ready to learn. And if you force things upon them, they're not going to learn it because they're not really ready for it. But because we all are creators and co-creators, you know, if you just live your life by example, people are going to naturally kind of gravitate towards you and start asking you questions. And what I found is the more people ask me questions, the stronger in my own convictions that I get. I have a really dear friend. His name is Rick Marcus, and he is a devout Christian. I mean, he's one of these guys that is absolutely proof that, you know, organized religion actually works, because he's an extremely wonderful, extremely nice guy, very caring, you know, all the time, you know, whether he's in church or not, is always trying to live, you know, the Christian way or the way Christ would have lived. And what's really awesome is we will have conversations for hours. And you can imagine the conversations between, you know, New Age metaphysics versus, you know, New Testament Christianity, and it's absolutely wonderful. And what we find out is we just, he'll ask me something, and I'll go, okay, well, you know, and we'll exchange these things back and forth, not with the intent of trying to change each other's way of thinking, but it makes each one of our own convictions even stronger, you know, and it's absolutely, absolutely wonderful. And you can go through hours and hours of just absolutely wonderful conversations, you know, that way. And I think the problem is that, you know, religions are not open to doing that. You know, you don't really see too much of Christians and Jews having that kind of theological interaction without it leading to, you know, a sort of heated debate. And, you know, it's kind of too bad.
Yes. Well, and it's so amazing that, you know, we don't want to enforce our beliefs on anyone. I think, and you're right, we live through that exampling. You know, are we consistent each and every day? I remember years ago, I had a friend finally come up to me and say, "Don't you ever really get mad?" And I go, "Well, I do have a scale of emotions, but I choose to control the situation and not let the situation control me." And doing that every day and choosing to be happy, I think we find it is a form of attitude. And the little things don't really gnaw at us. I think you probably run into people there and you go, "Why are you getting so bent out of shape? You know, it was only this or that." And it's like they go completely unglued. And you're probably standing back as I do and scratch my head and go, "Wow, you really need to center. You need to do some meditation."
Well, and you know, you hit it right on the head. Can you imagine if we could actually teach that in school? You know, just meditation and self-reflection and just teach that, the simple basic principle of, you know what, you can get all upset over something, but, you know, you have a set of circumstances and those circumstances don't change. Like, here's a great example. If I have like 3 minutes, I'll tell you this wonderful story. I don't think it's in my book, but I remember that I was on my way to this audition, and it was raining, and I'm in LA and traffic, and I'm like, oh my gosh, and I'm like almost late, and I'm dressed in a nice suit, and I'm running and trying to get in the building. I'm getting so like, oh man, I was just aggravated, and I went in and did the audition and drove away, and I was just angry and upset and irritated. And then about 3 weeks later, I was out with this young lady, and we were at a theater, and we walked out of the theater, and it was raining, and we're like, oh my gosh, and we held hands and ran and, you know, spun through the rain laughing and all that kind of stuff. And I stopped and it hit me like a brick. And I was like, this rain, this is the exact same rain that it was 3 weeks ago. The situation of the rain itself is the same. I just chose to experience it in a not a loving way or in a way that wasn't, you know, really beneficial to the evolution of myself. I could have just as easily gone, oh, this rain is wonderful, and gone into the audition and, you know, and not let it bug me. Or I could have came out of the theater with the girl going, oh no, my jeans are going to get wet. So, if we could just teach that principle that situations are situations, and we get to control how we want to experience that. If we want to be mad, we can be mad. If we don't, we don't. It's not going to change the rain stopping or not.
Exactly. Well, and I have to ask you, did you get the part?
No, I did not.
Well, I'm asking it, it's kind of a two-parter here. Now, in reflection, if you think now, if you had gone in there, even dripping wet, and smiled at the people there waiting for you and going, you know, I'm sorry, I just got drenched, but you know what? I'm here. And maybe it just took a different spin. Do you think you would have gotten that part?
I don't know if I would have gotten the part, but I definitely think it would have most definitely increased my chances. Because I would be coming from a loving state and not from a fear or negative state. So I think absolutely it would improve my chances tremendously. I think going in there like I did, I probably had no shot whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree, because, you know, the energy that we carry around us, and, you know, people may not be conscious, but they do sense it. When we go into a crowded room, how we gravitate to someone who's laughing and having a good time. And then we'll look over to that group of people that look like they're bickering and arguing. I mean, and you just want to stay as far away from them as you can possibly get. So how we present ourselves really plays a role of the people that you gather around, and even the people that you gather and keep as friends. I do a lot of sessions with people, and from the beginning, they start out and they're so negative, and I'm going, now I know any moment there's going to be something positive here coming out of their mouth. But then they'll go into talking about their friends, and they're the same way. So negative does gravitate to negative.
It's pure science. I mean, this is one of the things I'm really going to stress in my next book, which is going to be What You Believe You Create in Reality. And that is, you know, like energy attracts like energy. That's science. And, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, what you believe you create in reality. And the other part of that is, and the reason I think that works is it's through energy manipulation. And you're like a Reiki master. So, I mean, you know all about, you know, energy manipulation and how absolutely crucial and important it is to this, to our whole world of relativity and the universe and God and everything. I mean, it is everything to me. I knew energy manipulation played a big part, and I knew science says you can influence, just with your intention, you can influence energy, and that's all mm-hmm. proven and stuff. But I had an experience a few years ago. It was I had gotten injured, and I remember in my book when I had the injury that took me out for 2 years. Well, I had just gotten injured, and the doctor had decided he wanted to try doing some rehab before I had surgery. So I was going to Burning Man in 2006. So, you know, I was at Burning Earth with my friend. Her name is Natural. We call her Natural. And she was she's a master of Reiki, also. So she was doing Reiki on my shoulder through the whole trip. And it was, you know, it was amazing, you know, and really, really helped my shoulder. Well, there's a night where they do what's called a temple burn. And I had decided, on that night, to do some MDMA. You're familiar with that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Natural was going to hang with me and, you know, and be with me and stuff. And, you know, but she didn't do the drug herself. So after about an hour, the MDMA started to affect me, and the conversations we were having were amazing, you know, as it usually is. And at one point, I started feeling really connected to everything and everyone around me. And then an idea hit me, and I said to Natural, I said, what would happen if you performed Reiki on my shoulder while I'm in this altered state? You know, so she agreed and started doing Reiki on my shoulder, and it was unbelievable. I could feel the energy coming from her hands very, very intensely. I mean, I could actually feel her working the energy, and, you know, and she did this for about 20 minutes, and when she stopped, I noticed a huge difference, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we got up and started walking around, and she had stopped, and I was like, well, what's wrong? And she said, I'm rolling. You know, rolling is what it's called when you're under the influence of MDMA. So she knew the experience. She's had the experience in the past, so she was very familiar, you know, with its effects. And I said, no way. And I looked at her eyes, and they were totally dilated. I took her pulse. Her heart was racing. I mean, she was definitely rolling on the MDMA without having to take it, you know, and the effect that she got was, I should say, she got the effect from it, from my energy, you know, during the Reiki session, that exchange of energy. And it turned out that, you know, the effects were just as strong as it was on me, and it went for you know, twice the length that it did for me. And it really cemented to me, you know, how much energy can play, because, I mean, that energy, just pure energy, played a huge physical role in her reality, you know?
Oh, definitely.
I don't know if that's a great example of energy work, talking about doing MDMA, but, you know.
Well, that's one thing, you know, being a Reiki master and teacher, knowing the precautions that we have to take doing Reiki on an individual, because we have to put our own protection so that we don't take on the other person's symptoms, you know, mm-hmm. pains, drugs, or anything. We have to, you know, work with your energy, but not to take it on. And it can be, in her case, quite an experience. And not one I think she would probably want to do again. Because, you know, it's good to have empathy, feel the pain when you're working on an individual, but we can't take it on. Because if you're not careful, when you are doing your own cleansing once again, you may not cleanse that off. And so what you've done is you've taken like that sickness from another individual. Now it's housed in you. You've incorporated it. Right. So it's having to be extremely careful when you are working with energy. But it's amazing that when you are able to manipulate it, if you will, it's unbelievable. The power and the strength, the healing that you do have in your hands. I love working on people, but animals are just incredible. I think it's more fun working on an animal than it is a human being, because they're not sitting there and you're, as a person, well, is this going to work? I'm not sure about this. You know, they already start putting a negative spin on it. Where with an animal, they don't. They're just totally accepting of it. But I love doing Reiki, and I wish everybody would at least take level one, because then you learn how to center yourself. And when you do that, life becomes so much easier. And, you know, with you being on your spiritual path and living it, your life, I have to admit, reflecting back 20 years ago, thinking, my God, if I knew this then, how much easier going through those, you know, the accidents and, you know, and unfortunately, ending of a marriage, you know, those, it's not only the physical dilemmas, but it's the emotional, how differently we can handle that when we are in tune with our higher self.
Oh, I so agree with you. It's so true. And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned in my book is, you know, what, and it's like, I agree with you 100%. And then there's the other part of me that understand. I would love to have all this knowledge back when I was 20. I think my life would be a whole lot different, you know, but by the same token, you know, I've noticed that whenever I go through these things that at the time I consider a tragedy, you know, the ending of my marriage, you know, the being injured, you know, just things that at a time, there was a certain time in my life back in the late 80s where, you know, I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no money, no job, no, I mean, it was like I was at a point in my life where I was like, I have no idea what I this is the lowest point you can get. But I realized that each time I was in those points, those things led to the next thing that happened in my life to help me evolve, you know. My divorce from my ex-wife, Laurel, who's wonderful, you know, and I'm great friends with her, you know, still, and her husband. And at the time, it was like detrimental to me. I was like, oh my gosh, but I realized had that not happened, I most certainly would not be, I would certainly not be talking with you, interviewing you on BBS for sure, you know. You know, I wouldn't have a book. I wouldn't be, you know, where I am, you know, spiritually, and I am the happiest I've ever been in my entire life. And I thank, you know, my ex-wife, I thank Marie, my ex-girlfriend, who really helped me. And I thank them for getting me to where I am. I love it. So I see what you mean, but there's a part of me is like, I'd love to go back and do it with all this other knowledge. But at the same time, I kind of got to where I am because of that.
Well, and that's true, very true. And looking forward, you know, being a stuntman, and hopefully you're looking at career-wise, is there a timeline that stuntmen kind of retire? Or I'm a little curious on that aspect of your life.
Well, you know, honestly, what ends up happening is usually after about 15 or 20 years of doing stunts, you start transitioning into what's called stunt coordinating, which is the guy, and I do this now, you know, which is the guy that, you know, instead of actually doing the stunts, you choreograph the stunts, you hire the stunt people to do them, you put it all together, you make sure it's all safe, and you're called basically the stunt coordinator. That's generally the transition that happens. For me, I love doing the stunts so much, you know, that I kind of still like to get in there and do it. The problem is most of my career has been, you know, you get a reputation for certain things. And one of them for me is taking the hard hits. So, you know, if there's like, oh, you know, we gotta put someone in a wire and throw them 15 foot high into a concrete wall to the ground. Oh, well, call Banzai. So, you know, I tend to do those kinds of gags. And what has happened now is, I've had so many concussions in my career. I have absolutely no short-term memory whatsoever. I can't multitask. It's sort of the same thing that happens to professional football players, you know, after a certain time where, you know, their noggin is taking too many. I think in Latin they say too many hits by the snake. So, you know, yes. I can't do much more of it. You know, I really need to really start focusing on transitioning more to coordinating and really continuing on with the book, because I think, you know, trying to share, you know, what I know spiritually with other people is a lot more helpful to people than me working in film and television.
Wonderful. Well, and that's going to lead me, maybe you've already answered my next question, is what inspired you, Banzai, to, you know, we have journals, I have journals, and I do writing and various things, but to finally do that leap, you know, sitting down, putting together a book, and publishing it. Was there something that happened that finally just kind of gave that little shove that, okay, today is the day I'm going to do this?
That is a great question, Peggy. It's good. Actually, what happened, it was August of 2006, and I was working on a TV show. It was called Big Day. It was on like ABC for like one season. And I had to do a stunt where I would step backwards out into the street, and get hit by a minivan at 25 miles an hour. Well, I did the stunt, and that stunt destroyed my left shoulder, and that took me out for 2 years. So at that time, you know, I was living on my sailboat in Marina del Rey, and I had toyed with the idea of writing a book at that time, and I thought, well, you know what? I got 2 years, or I didn't realize 2 years, but I knew it was going to be a long time out. So I was like, well, you know what? Now's the time to do it, you know? And I'd done a lot of journaling, you know, just through what I would call my spiritual evolution. And I'd find that, you know, that when I would talk with people about my journey, that they themselves seemed to be benefiting. So I knew what the book was going to be about. But I knew writing the book also, since it was going to be published in the metaphysical genre, that I would need to get some credentials. So I looked into a lot of different schools. That would offer, you know, a degree in metaphysics, and there are a lot of diploma mills out there, but I found this one legitimate school, and it was called the University of Metaphysical Sciences. I ended up having to take like 50 classes, and I did a master's thesis, and I did my doctorate dissertation, you know, which I had to redo 3 times, but I finally got my doctorate in philosophy and metaphysical sciences, and with that credential, I think that really helped me, you know, pick up a publisher, which in this case ended up being Two Moon Press, to help me get my book out there. So really it was my injury and me sitting around going, man, I need to freaking do something, and this might be the time to do it.
Oh, but you know, you're so right, Ronce, when you touch upon, you know, writing the book or talking about your experiences, how you saw people listening and possibly taking that information and incorporating it in their own life. And that's, you know, what a profound teacher, you know, that alone it can be. And I think we're in a new age, and I guess that's why they put these books in the new age section, that there is an awakening. I think as you've heightened, you're seeing more people who are being drawn to the spiritual path, who are, you know, now talking about, gosh, you know, I know grandma used to, you know, do tarot cards, or, you know, or Aunt Bess used to be able to tell you someone's going to call before the phone rang. That there's, you know, it's not something that looks as black magic as much anymore, or so scary, that this is a wonderful, beautiful gift to have, coming into your spiritualism, having, you know, I have a wonderful spirit guide, Anthony, and I see him and talk to him as I do you. And having someone walking beside you every day to bring you into your highest consciousness, you know, what a beautiful thing to have. And in my prayers and meditation, I ask daily that mankind heightens their consciousness, so we can get away from the wars and the anger and man's inhumanity to man. When you look around and you see what's going on, and especially the effect you feel, because you are in a different place and a different mindset, you know, it I'm sure at times brings you to tears, because I know it does me when I see the horror that surrounds us in this earth.
Oh my gosh, yes. And you know, it's like, and it's working for you, those, you know, the prayers that you're doing, because although, you know, there's a lot of horrible stuff going on in the world, I can't help but notice that there seems to be more and more people that are becoming more and more spiritual, more and more thinking of the way we do. It amazes me that people I've known for years, all of a sudden, wow. And after this book came out, I'm really finding out more and more, like, hey, I believe kind of the same way. And they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you believed it too. And I just think that, you know, it is turning, and it's exponentially, you know, getting better and better. And I think we're kind of in a battle right now. It's like, will we reach the critical mass of, you know, spiritual thinking before, you know, we destroy ourselves? It's kind of like a race. And I'm kind of rooting for the spiritual side, hopefully. But, you know,
oh, as I am,
focus on all that. I think it's very easy to focus on all the negative stuff, because it's all we get bombarded with in the news and stuff. And I think there's a lot of good out there too, that, you know, we sometimes seem to forget because we're so blasted by fear all the time. They don't realize that they're just not showing us the love that's out there too.
Yes, and what's wonderful in it, and your book, and again, I want to make sure I don't end up having our hour go by without letting people know how they can get your book, honey, where it would be the best avenue.
The best way to get my book is through Amazon, or you can go to my website, which is www.theburningspirit.com, and then you can follow a link, and it'll take you right to Amazon where my book is, and you can buy it right there. That's the easiest and the simplest way to do it, because, you know, Amazon's great. You know, they get it to you within a couple of days, so it's kind of wonderful.
And there's no waiting in line.
That is so true.
Well, this is a great book. I had to just put it out there to the listeners, and it has a wonderful appearance and the burning spirit. And is there a reason, honey, you came up with that name?
It's kind of funny. On the book, you see a picture of a little man, and his legs are on fire, and it's the Burning Man. That's kind of has been a sort of a prominent, like, icon in my life for a long time, before I was even a spiritual guy. So I named my book The Burning Spirit, and I have after my first Burning Man, I had an amazing spiritual epiphany, and I got a tattoo of a Burning Man, you know, on my stomach to commemorate it. So, you know, I thought, oh, you know what? That's going to be the name of my book, The Burning Spirit.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think getting a tattoo, yes, that really has a profound meaning to you.
It does. And it's a guy on fire, so it's like that's what I do in the stuff world. So it's just kind of just meant to be. It has many, many, many meanings.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I just got a note. Hear from Seth that we have a caller online too, and actually he claims to be married to you, so oh wonderful, my husband is calling in here, Bonsai.
Your husband. What's
he
your husband's
is
name?
So if Seth, if you can patch him in, I think Bonsai, I guess he has a question for you.
What's his name?
His name is Rick.
Rick. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you, Rick?
I'm doing great. yeah, I have two
Your wife
questions,
is being
Bonsai.
Very gentle with me. I appreciate it. This is my first radio interview, so I'm very thankful.
Oh, you're doing
very
well.
Oh,
my God, Bonsai, you're natural.
thank you. So you had a question for me.
Yeah, I have two. Okay, the first question is, do you still use psychedelics in your spiritual development?
Okay. It's kind of funny because when you read my book, it kind of seems like I do a lot of it. But in reality, it really like maybe once a year, you know, in the right conditions, I will do it. So, yes, I do. I did an ayahuasca ceremony in the Amazon jungles of Peru about 3 months ago. And that was amazing. Before that was probably about a year, when I had, and I did some, MDMA and had some amazing, you know, spiritual revelations. But I think it's really important. I'm glad you brought this up, Rick. Because using drugs as a tool, I mean, it's very important that, you know, and I'm not condoning this. I'm not saying this is the way to enlightenment. It just happens to be the path that kind of worked for me, but I'm very clear with my intention that it is a tool. You know, I don't use it as an escape. I make sure I'm in a safe, loving, trusting environment, you know, with people around me, you know, that love me and, you know, we'll see that I'm okay as I, you know, journey in my experience. So, you know, it's not like just, oh, you know, hey, I'm at a rave. Let's go take some mushrooms and see what happens kind of thing. It's very structured for me.
Good.
Very good. Bonsai, how often do you see your spirit guide?
Wow. Did you read my book?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, well, how did you know? I was going to say, how did you know? That's amazing. I Yes, well, every morning I meditate, and I go through like a sort of a chakra clearing kind of thing, and I go to this visualization of this place where I see my spirit guide and my spirit animal and a few other animals that seem to be around to help me. But pretty much my spirit guide Gus, I see almost every day.
Do you see him like when you're looking through your third eye, just in your everyday, routine that you're doing?
No, I don't. You know what? I can feel it, when I'm just around and I'm like, oh, man, this is kind of an odd thing. Or like just before I started this interview, I was sitting here at my desk and I didn't really go, into a visualization or a meditative state to go see him, but I could, I know his presence is there, but I don't really see him unless I'm actually visiting this, this place in my mind's eye where I go to actually see and talk to him.
Hmm.
Why do you ask that? I'm curious.
Well, that was my question. Well, I think people have that question for themselves a lot about connection with their spirit guide and how their connection is spiritually.
You're right.
And
it's
a lot of
amazing
drugs are used and stuff. So those two questions I had, I saw that you,
yes.
I did leaf through your book a little bit. And so, I saw that you had gone to Peru and stuff. So I had those questions.
That's great. Well, thank you. Thank you for those questions. It's, that last question about the spirit guide, it really is truly amazing. And I know that your wife has, Anthony as a spirit guide. And, as part of my one of my classes, my master's classes for my degree, I had to take an individual and lead them through a guided meditation. And what I ended up doing was ended up leading this person to this place where they got to meet their spirit guide. And so it's amazing. It's like what me and Peggy had talked about earlier, that that there's with energy, there's so much going on out there. I always go back to Shakespeare's line, and it always comes back to me, and there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies. And thank goodness that your wife has taken the path that she's taken to kind of open people up to this kind of thing, which is going to really help our world and help that race to beat out the fear and go to a place of love. So you got a wonderful wife there, Rick.
I do. She's a wonderful person. And
thank you.
I'll let Peggy wrap up her show with you. And thanks for your time, Banzai. And I appreciate your being on the radio and sharing everything that you've shared with people. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.
Okay. And Banzai, hold on. We got Cora on line one. So, Cora, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Hi, Cora. Yes,
hi.
Okay. I can hear you, Cora, and you've got Banzai at your disposal.
Wonderful.
Hi.
I am a medium. I've known things since I was a child, but in the last 2 years it's become very clear. And I was always based in the Christian faith. And since this has all happened, my thinking has changed just a little bit as far as I realized that I spent most of your life with the pastors and whoever telling you what the devil can do, but not what the angels can do for you and how they can work within your life. And I was wondering, how have your beliefs changed since you started on this spiritual path?
Oh, that is a great question. Wow. Yeah. It 180 degrees it has changed. From the world of Christianity, the world of Judaism, it's again, like I mentioned to Peggy earlier, that it's figuring out that, not living in fear. Once I figured out that I didn't need to live in fear, that I could live in love, unconditional love, that's for me. When I really realized it really dramatically changed my path. And I feel like now, in this stunt world when I work, I go on set and in my world, we deal with danger. We're doing dangerous things. And, And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the fear, but when I just let that love come in, and I know that fear is an acronym that I love. It's false evidence appearing real.
Exactly.
Fear.
I say that all the time.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Actually, I got to tell you, I don't know if I'm allowed to, if I can curse on radio, but there's another acronym for fear that I really like. Can I curse?
Go ahead.
Okay,
I'm
enough.
Fine.
Okay. Okay. It's fear. It's fuck everything and run. So, those happen to be my two favorite, but yeah,
well, thank God. I'm going to interrupt you for a second. BBS radio is mainstream, so honey, we're okay.
Fantastic. Well, I figured since we were talking about drugs that might be okay too, so.
Okay. Well, I have to say something to Banzai. Cora is also a dear friend of mine, and we just did a wonderful spirit fair together, and how different, you know, our gifts are in our spiritual paths. Cora has a wonderful ability to tap into spirits who are on the other side, and her gift is to help people who have lost someone through a tragedy or, you know, missing people. So that is her very special gift, and what comfort it brings to those families when their loved ones are found. And so how your gift and what you're doing through your books and talking on radio, and the more things that I see in front of you, you know, we each are playing such a role here to be, as I call, the ambassador for the divine.
Amazing. Well, I was waiting to talk to you. I wrote down we are ambassadors.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Cara, I'm curious. You said this in the last couple of years this has happened for you, but has this been something that has, you know, sort of just all of a sudden happened for you, or have you always toyed or always known and then you just decided to embrace it just a few years ago?
No, I've actually always embraced it, always known for my family, but I used to rent the Serenity building where Peggy has a business. And she told me once I took over that place that I had a gift, and being in there would bring that gift out. And I was in there about 6 weeks, and she had had spirit fairs in the past. And she was now living in Florida, and she told me in February of that year, which was a year ago, to put myself on the books and read. And I told her, she must be crazy. I can't do that. And I read 8 people that day, total strangers, and told them all about their selves. And I pray every day to be as amazed as the person in front of me. And I was totally, and to this day, am amazed the things that I look at people and tell them about people that have passed over or about their own lives. And I don't use cards or anything. It's my little brother that passed on. It'll be 12 years ago, the morning after Christmas, that is my spirit guide. And he just tells me or shows me.
Wow. Yeah. Well, good for you for bringing Peggy into your life.
Well, I am lucky that she came into my life.
Here we go. We're co-creating, you see?
Yes, we are. Well, I feel very, very blessed. And unfortunately, I cannot believe this 55 minutes has just come and gone. And so I'm unfortunately, Cora, I'm going to have to say thank you, honey, for calling.
No
and
problem.
I will talk with you, I'm sure, tomorrow. And I want to say a thank you to my husband for calling in. And we'll have longer discussion about your book, Banzai, later on. But before I let you go, I just want to say again, Banzai, thank you so very much for being on BBS Radio tonight. I didn't want to schedule anyone else but you and give you the entire hour, because I'm fascinated when people come forward, how life has changed, and wanting people to know it and to share it through conversations and through books. And I truly encourage those to go out and buy The Burning Spirit, a spiritual adventure of a Hollywood stuntman. And they can't miss the name when you see Banzai. Think of that Burning Man.
That's right. Well, thank you very much, Peggy. It was a pleasure being with you this hour. And thank you, Rick and Cara, for calling.
Oh, but you are so welcome. And please, we'll be in touch. And I would love to know when you're in Michigan, because I have a book here I would love to have you autograph for me.
You got it. You got it. I will do that for you.
Well, thank you. Well, and good luck. I know you have to get around and for another interview, so good luck with that. And email me and let me know if there's a place we can go and listen to this next interview. And your friends who might be interested, they can go to the archives here on BBS, and they'll be able to hear the entire program with you in it.
Oh, okay, great. I'll put that up then. Thank you.
You are welcome, dear. So I know Mr. Zeth is ready to say good night to us all. So all the listeners, please tune in next Monday. We'll surprise you with our next guest. And again, a wonderful thank you to Banzai Vital for being our guest this evening. And good night.